that's where we've really had to learn a lot more about gut health, because gut health was not as good when we made some of these changes as far as reduction in antibiotic use. So that's where we really started, when that was happening and transitioning. And still today, we still don't know everything about gut health, and we're still learning a lot. But with those transitions, or that transition, major transition, that's where we had to really focus on gut health. What is in the gut as far as the microbiome, as well as the gut integrity itself, you know, the intestinal walls.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Poultry Star is a unique feed ingredient that includes a prebiotic and probiotic, and it's designed specifically for poultry. Improve gut health with Poultry Star. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/poultrystar. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Zoetis Hatchery Health Team helps you raise field-ready birds with a strong immune foundation. Learn more at zoetis.com.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show, presented by Wisenetics. I'm Doug Korver, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the poultry industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. If you find this interview interesting, please let us know by visiting our website at wisenetics.com. Our guest today is Dr. Teresa Laverne, and she is the Senior Technical Services Manager at Natural Biologics. Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show, Teresa.
Hi, thank you. I'm glad to be here today.
That's good to have you. Before we really get into the interview, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background? How did you get interested in poultry?
Yes, I can. And poultry was not my first career choice. It is where I have made my career, though. So I have an agriculture background. My family has always been involved in agriculture in some way. My family had actually a beef slaughter plant and meat processing plant when I was young. We also have always had horses, and I actually spent a lot of my growing up years on a thoroughbred broodmare farm. And then also growing up, I was in 4-H, where I was introduced to showing different livestock, and swine or pigs were my favorite animals to show. So when I was going to college, I said I was going to focus on swine, and that's where my career would be. I have a bachelor's in animal science, master's in swine nutrition. And then when I went for my PhD, that's where I was introduced into poultry, because I was in a program with a major professor who did just as much poultry as swine research. And when I started the program, I said, I really want to focus on swine. I don't really want to do much with poultry. And of course, he just smiled and said, okay. And it wasn't very long that I started doing poultry research as well as swine research. And of course, that's just opened a lot of opportunities throughout my career. However, my first job was as a swine technical service manager. And I did that for a couple years in the Midwest, and actually had the opportunity to apply for a position at LSU as a poultry extension specialist and professor. Track eventually. It moved into that. So with that, I made my transition into poultry and spent almost 17 years there as, you know, a poultry faculty member and extension specialist. And then I guess it's been 10 years now, I decided to go back into industry and have been supporting prebiotics and probiotics and natural plant compound type feed additives, primarily for poultry.
Okay.
Kind of not my first direction I was going, but that's where it's been, and been a great career.
That's where you've ended up so far.
Yes.
Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to dig deeper into the poultry health challenges you face. By gathering scientific evidence, they identify the most effective combinations of natural ingredients that improve animal health. Visit naturalbiologics.com/poultry to see the newest research in both turkeys and chickens.
So we're going to talk a little bit more about dietary yeast products in a bit, but let's start with some context. Why is gut health a challenge for poultry?
Sure. So for some of us that have been around for a little bit, we were working, and when I was in graduate school and starting my career, we were using a lot of antibiotics as, you know, in feed, and that was just common. But as times have changed and we've learned more over the years, and of course the animal industries listening to consumers, we've transitioned more away from antibiotics, correct, and into more natural type feed additives, looking for what we can do to replace antibiotic use or reduce the antibiotic use in our food animals. So with that change or less antibiotic usage, we had all kinds of different issues come up that we were that were masked or just didn't appear because of what we were using in our feed as part of it. So that's where we've really had to learn a lot more about gut health, because gut health was not as good when we made some of these changes as far as reduction in antibiotic use. So that's where we really started when that was happening and transitioning. And still today, we still don't know everything about gut health and we're still learning a lot. But with those transitions or that transition, major transition, that's where we had to really focus on gut health. What is in the gut as far as the microbiome, as well as the gut integrity itself, you know, the intestinal walls. There's just a whole series or a lot of different components that go into the gut health. And now we're really focusing on how we can make that as best as possible without using an antibiotic or something to kind of mask or take care of problems that might appear.
So I think when a lot of people think about yeast, they think about ethanol production and what's left over after ethanol production, or beer or wine or distilled spirits production. So what are some of the sources of yeast for the poultry industry, and maybe how do they differ?
Okay, and that is exactly true. And those are the industries we source yeast from to go into poultry and livestock feeds. Baker's yeast, brewer's yeast, and yeast from the ethanol industry. So those are the primary sources that we use to go into livestock feeds. And there are actually most of that yeast, or by far the majority of the yeast that goes into livestock and poultry feeds, is a strain of Saccharomyces cerevisiae, and that it can be from those three sources, baker's yeast, brewer's yeast, or ethanol yeast. However, there are differences in those different types of yeast, and a primary difference would be the thickness of the yeast cell wall. We're using these yeast components really to get those functional complex carbohydrates that are in that yeast cell wall, the mannan oligosaccharide or the MOS and the beta glucans. And of course, those being contained in the yeast cell wall, if we use a source of yeast with a thicker yeast cell wall, obviously we'll have a higher concentration or higher percentage of MOS and beta-glucan in that source. Now, when we look at the three sources, baker's yeast versus brewer's yeast versus ethanol yeast, the yeast cell wall thickens in that order. Baker's yeast usually has the thinnest yeast cell wall, brewer's yeast in the middle, and then ethanol source yeast has a thicker cell wall. The reason for that is in the ethanol producing industry, the yeast is recycled maybe 5, 6, 7 times in the process. The yeast is recycled. Well, the yeast cell is trying to survive. So its mechanism is to thicken its cell wall in that process as it's recycled. So the result for us that are using these products in poultry is we can obtain a yeast source with a higher concentration of the functional components, complex carbohydrates, MOS, and beta-glucan. And we actually do, obviously, a lot of research as an industry and look at the different types of yeast and how effective they are at binding pathogens, because a lot of these yeasts are used to bind mannose-dependent pathogens like Salmonella or E. coli. So through a series of agglutination assays, basically in vitro, putting a known amount of a pathogen with the yeast source, we can look to see what percentage of that pathogen is bound by the yeast source we put with it. And we actually do see what I just said, having a thicker cell wall, allowing, you know, meaning more moss in that product, we actually do see a greater rate of agglutination or binding of that pathogen. Obviously, you know, we have more moss to do the work. So we actually can see that and do have data to show us how that difference in moss concentration or thickness of the cell wall makes a difference.
So in the fermentation process, you've obviously got substrate like corn. You know, I think a lot of us view the co-product of ethanol production as the distiller's dried grains. How do you, without giving up any trade secrets, but how do you separate out the yeast from the other leftover products?
So there's lots of different products out there. I guess when we talk about yeast components, maybe we just kind of back up a little bit. There's some that are more nutritive type feed additives to more nutraceutical type. And those more nutraceutical type would be separating out that yeast cell wall to get those complex carbohydrates. So starting on the nutritive side, you have dried yeast, which would just be everything. It's an inactive product. And that would be more of a nutritive type product for a ruminant animal, not so much for a monogastric. And then we can have some active dried yeast, which would be a live product and more like a probiotic type yeast, which again, more of that would be used in the ruminant than the monogastric. But then past that, we really start get to the processing where we might make a yeast culture where we take the yeast, feed it, and let it live and do its thing, die off, and produce functional components. And at that point, we're actually producing more of a stable, consistent type product where we start using that. We use a lot in the ruminant diets as well, but that's where we're starting to get to a product that is processed, yeast product processed that does benefits for poultry as far as gut health. And then we go steps further or just basically take the yeast cell itself and break it up, hydrolyze it. We do different types of methods that we can do to hydrolyze yeast cells, commonly enzymatic hydrolysis or an autolysis, where we're breaking up that yeast cell and then we're freeing those functional components. And then we can go a step further if we want to just isolate the moss and beta-glucan, or more concentrated product that's moss and beta-glucan. We take that hydrolyzed yeast cell, basically centrifuge it, and you get out those moss and beta-glucan. So you have a really concentrated product there. So lots of different types of yeast products and several ways in which we can get those functional products that we want.
Mm-hmm. And target them for different applications.
Sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned Saccharomyces cerevisiae. Are there other yeast species that are of interest or that you're working with?
So yes and no. There are other species out there. I believe more of those are used as the nutritive type or the probiotic type of species. Yes. Myself, no, we've, as a company, have focused on the Saccharomyces cerevisiae. Actually, where our company is a cross species. And so we're using the same source of yeast and yeast components across species, across, you know, animal species. And we've focused on the Saccharomyces cerevisiae. It's so well documented in the research across different species of animals, how it works and how functional it can be. And then I guess we've just kind of carefully selected our supplier of the yeast components to have a product or to get the components that are really bioavailable and effective, as well as cost effective for our customers.
Yeah, Saccharomyces cerevisiae is a pretty amazing organism.
It is. It's amazing that it's amazing. That kind of sounds silly, but something so little and that is such a small part of a diet. You know, we can use as little as 50 grams per ton of complete feed sometimes. I guess the products I work with more of the time are 100 grams per ton of complete feed. So pretty amazing. Such a small amount can go through that ton of feed and do so much work within the gut of the animal.
If you're enjoying this episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends and family. You can also set the notifications to on from our channel so you don't miss any other upcoming episodes. As always, please feel free to leave us your comments at any time. Your feedback is always important to us. So, Teresa, we talked a little bit about some of the specific functional components of yeast. Let's talk a little bit about what they do. So you mentioned mannan oligosaccharides, you mentioned beta glucans. What do they do in when we add them to poultry feed?
A lot of these products I find are used to help as part of a salmonella control program in poultry, especially the layer industry. But we do see that in the broiler meat production as well as turkeys. And there's not just one thing we can do in an overall salmonella control program, but a feed additive such as one with yeast components is part of that control program, along with vaccination or sanitation, biosecurity. And the reason why these feed additives can be used to reduce salmonella colonization as well as load within poultry is because salmonella is a mannose-dependent binding pathogen. If it's in the gut, it's looking for a source of mannose as its food, and the gut lining has mannose attached. So that salmonella can find that mannose sugar attached to it and just grow and flourish and colonize the gut. But when we use these yeast components, with the moss made up of the sugar unit mannose, when we feed that, that salmonella can find that source of mannose instead of what's attached to the gut and attach onto that that we're feeding and actually leave the gut. And there, over time, you've reduced your salmonella colonization within the bird. You've reduced your overall salmonella load within the flock. And just, you know, repeatedly staying, it's not a one time and done, one flock and done. You know, you do this over time. We like to say, you know, every bite, every day. And just throughout a complex and then overall, you can reduce the salmonella load within a broiler house or wherever you're feeding it because you've reduced that within the host itself. So a lot of the time I find these products are used in the salmonella control program. We also use, they're prebiotic. So they feed the good bacteria like lactobacillus or bifidobacterium. So again, we're improving gut health in this way. We've already kind of helped improve it by reducing the salmonella load, but we can also feed the good bacteria, increase their numbers, which of course outcompete the bad bacteria. So here we've helped to create a more favorable microbiome. As well as we see in our research, when we look at the gut integrity itself, see an increase in the villus height to crypt depth ratio, which of course means a healthier gut tissue itself, more binding, more absorption sites, more room for absorption of nutrients that way. With the healthier gut, more absorption of nutrients, then we can see our improvements in growth rate and feed conversion ratio. So kind of overall improving gut health by pathogen reduction, improving good bacteria counts, and then, you know, gut itself. We also talk about beta-glucans. We haven't mentioned that yet here. The beta-glucans are also part of that yeast cell wall, and they can work with the immune system if the immune system needs to react. They kind of prime the immune system so it can react faster if it needs to, and you have an overall improvement in the resilience and health of poultry.
So with respect to beta-glucans, much of my training has been on the Canadian prairies, and when I think beta-glucans, I think barley, I think oats, and the anti-nutritive effect of beta-glucans. So what's different between the plant beta-glucans and the yeast beta-glucans that maybe give some functional characteristics to the yeast beta-glucans specifically?
So I guess a beta glucan that I'm used or more familiar with from a plant would be from algae. And we actually have a product with that in it, or several products, but it's more linear 1-3 linkages and has been shown to be more effective at working with the immune system, as opposed to some of these. The yeast beta glucans can be very effective as well, but we kind of see we've seen some benefits with the algae source. I'm not as familiar with the other plant sources you mentioned. So it's more in the structure of the 1-3 versus the 1-6 linkages. We might see a difference. I do get asked quite a bit, how much is too much beta glucan, or how much is too much yeast providing beta glucan? Because we don't want that immune system stimulated to take energy that could be used for muscle growth or body growth, and go to the immune system. I don't know where that point is. I do know that we've been able to use basically 5 times the inclusion rate that we normally recommend, and have not seen a depression in growth performance. So I don't exactly know where that is, but that is a concern that we might be feeding too much, activating the immune system more than needs to be, and we lose some of that energy that could be going to body weight growth, or growing of the animal. So, but another thing we also find with the beta glucans or the yeast components is that when they're used with a vaccine, right? We do a lot of vaccines. We tend to see a higher level of vaccine titers along with using these. And I guess that's coming from the beta glucan part, working again with the immune system, but we also tend to see a benefit there as far as higher vaccine titers with the beta glucans or yeast components.
So are there other components in the yeast that also have functional properties?
There are. Another one, it would be nucleotides, and that would be more in the yeast culture as well as the autolyzed type yeast. The nucleotides, which can be used for the organs, which have a rapid protein turnover rate. And you provide this source of nucleotides, peptides for that to happen as well.
So we've talked about a number of different active components, but how does your company process the yeast to increase bioavailability of these components, or how do you ensure standardization of your final product?
So, we haven't necessarily talked about in detail about the hydrolysis part of this overall program, and that would be breaking up that yeast cell to make the cell wall the components more bioavailable, not bound in that yeast cell wall, but in units that can do their work as far as binding salmonella or feeding the good bacteria. So we actually use a source of yeast that is hydrolyzed through an autolysis process, which is if we compare it to an enzymatic process of hydrolysis, which I believe these are the two main ways or most widely used ways to hydrolyze the yeast cells, either enzymatic hydrolysis or autolysis. The autolysis process is actually more of the natural process the yeast goes through itself. It has enzymes inside of it that work from the inside out to break down that cell wall and make those MOS and beta glucan available, more bioavailable. An enzymatic hydrolysis process actually works from the outside in, right? We put enzymes with the yeast cells, and those enzymes work to break the cell wall. There's differences in the environmental conditions needed for these two processes to happen. For the enzyme process to work, you have to change the temperature of the environment, the pH, add the enzymes, let them all do the work, change the pH back to make the product that we can feed. And you're doing a lot of things up and down, and actually results in a greater content of ash in the hydrolyzed product you're producing, and can be somewhat expensive or maybe more costly than another procedure like the autolysis, which I said is a natural process. We're just kind of speeding it up with temperature and salt and letting the yeast cell do its work. Other differences are in the enzymatic process. You can use a source of dead yeast cells, which is typically done because we don't care if that yeast cell is alive or dead. We just want the moss and the beta-glucan. However, for the autolysis process, we need a source of live yeast cells. So having this process or this facility to do this co-located within an ethanol plant, make sure you have plenty of live yeast cells to do that. Okay, so that was kind of the two processing methods, autolysis versus enzymatic hydrolysis. Now, how are they different? We find that in the autolysis process, I mean, obviously, as a company called Natural Biologics, we want natural types of processes and feed additives and components. But we also find that in that process, we produce a size of moss beta-glucans, which are less digestible in the gut compared to the moss and beta-glucan sizes, molecule sizes produced by the enzymatic hydrolysis. And we've done that with a collaborator that has looked at the actual digestibility of these moss and beta-glucan in broilers. And we do see that the moss and beta-glucan from autolysis are less digestible than that of the size of the components they get from the enzymatic hydrolysis. So that means those components, moss, beta-glucan, stay in the gut where they can do their work and can be more effective, basically just because of the types of processing that we use to result in the hydrolyzed yeast.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. At Signify Animal Lighting, we use light as a tool, backed by science to support growth, comfort, and performance. Better light, better animals. Better results with Signify. Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A Diet Forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try DietForge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
So before we let you go, we've got a few closer questions for you that we ask all our guests. So what's your favorite poultry or agriculture-related book or resource?
So I go back to Poultry Science, the Journal of Poultry Science, and I like the Journal of Applied Poultry Research as well, being more on the, technical side now, tech service. JAPR has been a great resource as well. So since graduate school, I go to the journals. That's where I find the most, reliable current information.
How about outside of agriculture? What's your favorite book or resource or what do you like to do with your time?
So I have a hobby that's probably a habit, maybe more than hobby. But for that, I usually just talk to other people that do the same thing and watch. I have horses and like to barrel race. So I have plenty of opportunity to watch others and how they do things and with their horses. And of course I've got, some associations that I belong to. So, we ride together and we can just talk and share ideas. And I've always found that, networking with people is always really beneficial, learning, we learn, from our mistakes. We can also, pick up tips from other people and maybe we can learn faster that way or make improvements that way as well. So I think it's more kind of networking with people and sharing ideas than reading book.
Well, that's maybe a good lead into our last question, which is, in your opinion, what do you think is the most important characteristic for a person to have to be successful in the poultry industry?
So it's going to be kind of a similar answer there as far as building your network of people, talking to as many as you can in your field or even out of your field that are doing something in agriculture. You know, being when I was in the School of Animal Sciences, you know, we had multiple species, so we could share ideas across different species of animals. In the company I'm in today, of course, we're cross species. So kind of the same thing. So again, it's, you know, just building a you know, network of people that you can talk to or know who to go to ask questions, you know, learning about what they're doing. Obviously, scientific meetings are great because you can see what's being done across the industry and the research and seeing from that as well. So it's just, you know, kind of communicating and talking to different people and learning about what they're doing. And I guess one of the biggest things I like to say is in graduate school, we learned how to learn and we should never stop that. And whatever form that is for you, for the individual person, you know, do that, whether it's reading or going to, you know, listen to scientific talks or, you know, just talking to different people, whatever form it is, you know, just continue learning. And because we've learned how to learn. And we learn our ways that's best for us to learn in. So, yeah, just taking in everything you can whenever you can. You know, don't miss opportunities for learning.
Yeah, that's great advice. Dr. Teresa Laverne, thanks so much for joining us today on the Poultry Podcast Show.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
That concludes another episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is important to us. You can visit our website at wisenetics.com to learn all about our podcast segments for poultry, for swine, dairy, beef, feed mill, crops, and even pet food. I'm Doug Korver, and I'll see you next time on the Poultry Podcast Show.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.